This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 537, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Podcast. This is episode 537. I am Josh Flanagan. I'm told I'm quite hot in mic level. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello.
Who's just the right level. And Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
Who has variable levels.
Yep.
We are iFanboy. We like comics. Every week we read a bunch of them. We read our stack of comics. One of them picks their favorite book. One of them. One of those guys picks
their favorite book. One of
those people. You know, those people. Those. You people. Picks their favorite book, and we call that the pick of the week. And we'll talk about that book, other books, talk about some stuff, other things, maybe some listener mail, you know. Listen, there's a format, but we act like there isn't. We act like it's all casual, so that's how we're going to present it to you.
The conversation happens organically, just completely organically, the same way every week.
What do you do to prepare? Here is your spoiler warning. It's a review show. Use your head, knucklehead. Come on. It's going to be some spoilers, especially if we're talking about DC Rebirth and Captain America. although I don't know how you wouldn't have had that spoiled for you at this point, so I don't really take any responsibility. Ron!
Yes. So, so going into this week of a highly, highly anticipated and controversial week, as you mentioned, I thought it was a bit of a relief to see out in the world people actually talking about the comics themselves and not about the movies and all that sort of stuff, so that was kind of cool, despite them spoiling things. Despite the goddamn preview images on Facebook spoiling things.
Did you get spoiled by this for this one?
No, I did not. I was able to. Well, yeah. So I was able to avoid the spoilers despite the leaks and all things like that for DC Rebirth, because I was trying to take the media blackout kind of approach to it. So anything I saw that mentioned spoilers or reveals or anything like that, I did not click. I did not look. And admittedly, I went into DC Rebirth number one cautiously. Because DC, I mean, the number of books I've been reading from DC has leveled off dramatically over the years after the New 52 for reasons that, you know, we won't get into. You know, a lot of people have been asking for our analysis of the New 52 and things like that. I feel like we've talked about that.
We've been doing that for the last 5 years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But you know, a little cautious, a little, you know, kind of like, well, what are they going to do? You know, but I'll give it a shot. I mean, that's the thing is at any given point, I'll try something new. And part of the draw was knowing that this was a Geoff Johns written book. And despite Geoff Johns writing Justice League, which I think was the only book he's been writing recently,
yes.
Which seemed to be mired and not very compelling, and yeah, not just that never-ending dark side thing. Mm-hmm. So I was like, all right, I'll check this out. You know, 80 pages for $2.99. Art by Gary Frank, Phil Jimenez, Ethan Van Sciver, Ivan Rice or whatever the pronunciation.
I like that it's been like a decade of us just futzing around with that guy's name.
Yeah, exactly. Hard to not just give it a shot. Although I do think it's funny that on the first page it says to go read Justice League number 50 and Superman number 50 before you read this. And Justice League, I think, was a $5.99 book. Which is ridiculous. I'm sorry. It's ridiculous.
So I didn't read the Justice League, but I saw that note at the end of the first page and thought, oh, I haven't read that Superman yet. Yeah. So I stopped reading and I went and read that issue of Superman. Then I came back and I appreciated the note.
And it did not matter.
Well, it's. Well, do we want to take this tangent for a second?
Because sure. Yeah.
I read both of those issues, and the important thing about Superman 52 was that the new 52 Superman dies in it.
Yeah. By the way. Superman died this week. No one noticed.
No one noticed. Yeah.
That changed the comics industry when that happened the first time.
Yep.
So no one mentioned it.
He dies because of the kryptonite poisoning that he had acquired during the whole run of the book. Right? Yeah. That's what happened. Josh, you read it.
Yes.
I read it too.
In Justice League 50, Superman is told he's dying from the poisoning he got from being possessed and fighting on Apocalypse. So even with these two books you're told to read, he dies in two separate ways.
Yeah.
There was no continuity between them. I just found it a perfect encapsulation of the mess that is in New 52, in that he literally was told he was dying for two separate reasons.
Yep.
In two separate books that you're told to read before this.
Oh, God. Anyway. So
I only read one of them, though, so it was cool.
Yeah. So I sat down, I curled up with the DC Rebirth number one, and I read it, and I made it about halfway through before I had several realizations, and I was like, oh, man, this might be the pick. And then I got to the end of it, and I said, there's no way I can deny classic Geoff Johns DC comic. Mm-hmm. Felt like years ago, right? What's really a Flash story.
Yeah.
And for longtime listeners of iFanboy might remember that Flash is my favorite DC Comics hero, and I feel like it's been years. I mean, I've been enjoying the Flash through the TV show, not through the comics, and so I feel like it's been years that I've been enjoying a Flash comic in the actual comics. And then, you know, just the meta text of every, like, this is basically just like, yeah, even though in the comics continuity it's 10 years, but it's for us it's 5 years. This just basically page after page peeled back and just hit the rewind button to take us right before the new 52, right at Flashpoint.
Yeah, we fucked up.
Yeah, pretty much, right?
That was the thesis of this issue.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. And so after reading that, and then wait, hang on, I got one more observation. Then the other thing, though, because I really was thinking about this for a few hours, and I was trying to.
Are we ready to do this now? Then
I was trying to. Well, not. Well,
sounds preliminary at best.
Well, you know, we got deadlines and things like that. But I was trying to nail down what it was that resonated so much with this book, and I actually sat down with this comic next to other comics. And flip the page. No. And flip this the pages. Flip the pages, page by page. And while DC Rebirth at 80 pages took a long time to read and had a lot of content in it, I realized the for the example of this, I compared it to Captain America: Steve Rogers number one, which we're gonna talk about a little bit as well too. And on a page by page average, Captain America: Steve Rogers number one is. And I feel like this is indicative of a lot of the modern comics that are out now, both from Marvel and DC, just weighed down by lots of text.
Lots of dialogue. We're not talking about Captain America.
Right, no, yes, but then looking at DC Rebirth, while there's lots of words on various pages, stuff like that, on average, if you look at the long term of the average, Johns definitely subscribes to more the let the art tell the story more than the words. And there are numerous pages where there are not many words at all. And it works like elegantly and perfectly. And like that's kind of, and that kind of craft kind of observation was, I was just like, oh man, like this is masterclass. Yeah, exactly. So, so all that stuff swirled in. I'm like, there's no, I fell for it. Hook, line, and sinker. I can't deny it. I'm excited about DC again just through this one issue for various reasons. Now the question will be what comes after this. But take this in a vacuum, and the 80-page long apology and undo button that Geoff Johns is trying to hit totally worked with me, and I loved it. So
it's not really 80 pages. It's 60 pages, and there's 20 pages of covers in the background.
Right.
Here's the thing. If you read this digitally, you don't know what you're in for.
Yeah. Right.
So I was just reading. I was like, how long is this? 80? Oh, my God. I just kept going. It didn't bother me because I actually figured, usually when you see an issue like that, I figure half of it's going to be just reprints or something. I was like, no, it's 8. It's, you know, 69, whatever, original pages. Like, it was all one thing made for this. And I was like, that's kind of cool of them. That's all right. This was definitely a thing that – that struck that bit of Ron's DC fan.
Yeah.
I mean, this was your, I saw it. I was like, yeah, okay. That makes sense.
Yep.
That's good. What about the other thing you didn't touch on?
Well, hold on. This is for me first. I was spoiled.
Oh.
And we're going to talk about the next book. I was also spoiled both by humans and not by the internet.
Stupid humans.
I hung out with someone last week who recently socialized with Geoff Johns, and he was like, yeah, he told me about the blank thing. And I was like, there was a pause where no one said anything, and I was like, fuck.
He's got a, listen, like, he's got a big mouth, that guy.
I know. And I was just like, come on, man. He's like, I thought you read that. I was like, I don't read these things anymore. So I got that spoiled. So that sucked. But, because I think it would have been much more impactful if I hadn't known what was coming. Yeah. However, this issue was like a giant warm blanket that I swaddled myself in and just rolled around like a baby for a couple hours. I even sent a note to Ron saying I would make out with this issue if I could. I never send notes usually before we talk about it in the show.
Yep.
This wasn't, well, not perfect. This hit every, this was as close to as I think I'm going to get to that old DC feeling as I can.
Yep.
And I think also, two things. One, this is probably Geoff Johns' last comic for a long time. He got promoted again at DC Entertainment. So he's not writing anything. He's not slated to write anything in the next wave of books. But also, this felt like old Geoff Johns. We haven't really felt like old Geoff Johns in the last 5 years. We've talked about that. His Justice League stuff hasn't really felt like that. This felt like reading an old issue of Justice Society or an old issue of Flash.
Yep.
Well, his whole, I don't want to say his whole thing, but so much of his appeal was based on his really nice grasp of what the legacy meant to everything. And when they went and ripped the legacy away from everything, I think he was a little unmoored.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And maybe that's what he does well. That's the instrument that he plays really well. And so without it, it just didn't feel the same.
Yep. Yeah. It lacked any sort of anchor to build upon, and all this was foundation. I mean, if you go through page by page of this, there's subtle little things that are respectful and hearkening of DC's legacy. You know, just like so the premise of the book is that Wally West, the original Wally West, is trapped in the Speed Force, and he's trying to get out, and he's reaching out. First, he reaches out to Batman, and then he reaches out to Linda Park. And, you know, none of them know who they are. And then finally he reaches out to Barry. And for whatever reason, Barry, you know, the switch flips and Barry remembers him and pulls him out of the Speed Force and everything, you know, and that's the catalyst towards, you know, whatever's happening now in the world. And
very nice nod back to Crisis on Infinite Earths.
I was just going to say, yeah, there were not only thematic nods back to Crisis on Infinite Earths, but also like page structure.
Yes.
You know,
and posing, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's the thing, is that you can be reflective and build on that legacy without without making it cheap or lazy or anything. There's a way to do it elegantly, and that's what I walked away from this issue is like this was elegant. This was and the thing is DC. For me, when I think of DC and DC's heroes and all stuff like that, I think of elegance. You know, I think of the legacy and the history and the elegance that comes with that. You know, and especially for me, it's the Flash. You know, going Jay Garrick, Barry Allen, Wally West. You know, like that whole thing. And I can't tell you how happy it was. There's one panel where he's like where Wally's remembering what it was like before the bad times. and there's that panel, and it was like right after
the Empire.
Yeah, exactly. It was right after Barry came back. There was one panel of like Barry and Wally and Max Mercury and Impulse, and it was like, oh god, it was just like, oh man, I missed that time. And so it's nice to see that he's using that as the anchor. And also, I want to give it up. I mean, we're talking a lot about Johns in the story, but I mean, this was I'm a huge Phil Jimenez fan, and I feel like I don't see much of his art as much anymore these days, but. Mm-hmm. Just Phil Jimenez, if you ask me, like between Gary Frank, Phil Jimenez, Ethan Van Sciver, and Ivan Rice, they're all great and they all work with Johns amazingly, but it was just awesome to see him at the Jimenez pages. And I just think all in all four artists kicked ass, and it was just like everybody doing what they do really well. And it just felt like 8 years ago. So
it was a great looking book, and I agree with you. I liked the Jimenez pages the best.
Yes, I mean,
everyone, this is an all-star group of artists, and that's the scene where they reunite. So, but anyway, some of my favorite artists working in comics is he got most of them here, but the Jimenez pages are really wonderful.
Yeah,
and when Wally and Barry finally hugged, I got it. They got me right in the in the heart.
Yep,
and I really wanted Wally to say, "What the fuck is up with your costume?" But I let that go.
But it wasn't even the. Oh yeah, it was the new costume. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
You even papered over that in your mind.
I did. Yeah, completely. Yeah.
That's so good.
So then let's address the elephant in the room. So the book ends with Batman, thinking something's up and thinking something wrong, and referring to the letter that his father wrote him, that Wally was yelling him at. And there in the wall in the Batcave is the comedian's smiley face pin. And then the epilogue is a Dr. Manhattan on Mars kind of reference, picking up the Watchmen layout of the nine-panel grid. Yeah, I know. Nine-panel grid. And my whole thing about that is fucking game on. As far as I'm concerned, that genie is out of the bottle, and who the fuck cares? Go have fun, right? I mean,
that's kind of where I am at this point.
Yes. Right? Yeah.
Like, so is that? That's this is the thing that everyone was talking about that got spoiled, right?
Yes. My friend was like, "Yeah, John told me all about the thing with Dr. Manhattan," and I just put my head on the table. Yeah.
Did you see it? So I didn't see that anywhere. I didn't know it was coming. But I mean, like, did you see that on the first page?
Yes,
on
I did.
On the very first page?
Yeah. I mean, I was I, like, really?
Oh, yeah, yeah,
like,
in the beginning.
I didn't know it was, and I looked and I was like, this is a Watchmen reference.
Yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I didn't know if he was just, I thought he was just being cheeky. I didn't think he was like going to bring it in. So at the end, I was like, really? They're going to do that? And I pretty much said the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? Go for it.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, the thing is you can spend your entire life, keeping it on a shelf and like praising it and all stuff like that, but they already did the whole before Watchmen stuff. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't change the original Watchmen. It doesn't do it so.
And also, they're never getting Alan Moore back.
Right, exactly. So. Yeah, right. So just so flame on.
I don't know why that made me so happy. That's
this issue made me happy. I wish it'd go a little further, but that's for the execution. We'll see how that goes. But as a one shot that was basically setting up this where we're going to go, I was extremely happy.
Yeah.
I like Wally a lot. I'm always been more of a Barry guy, but I was very happy to see Wally back. But now we have two Wallys.
I love Wally. Yeah.
Two characters, two versions of each character. Going forward, one for the old guys, one for the new guys. Everybody gets a character.
And it's but the thing is that it seems like we got the Flash book with Barry, and I think new Wally's in that, and then you got a Titans book with Wally and the other Titans. You got Teen Titans with the new Wally. I'm fine with it. Like it's as a Flash fan, I'm excited. Like I'm excited again for the Flash.
Two Blue Beetles to everybody. Two Green Lanterns. There's a character for everyone.
Yep. Two Wolverines. Two Captain America.
America.
Yeah. So, but
there's some Thors.
Yeah. There's some Thors out there. It's just
anyway. I love this. I swaddled myself in this book, which is hard because it was in the iPad. So.
Yeah. Plus, it's your old iPad.
Right. So. It was really warm. It was really warm. I got a burn.
That you got diesel fuel all over you. There was. You had to make sure not to clog the inlet because then
you only swaddle for about a minute before I had to start coughing from all the smoke and I had to.
Right, that and the contact burns.
Yeah.
Now, Ron, did you think that Wally was going to die in the Speed Force?
No, I had no idea.
Well, when he says thank you for the amazing life, and he starts disintegrating, and you see all the.
Well, yeah. I mean, but that was the moment.
I was fully bought in, and I was like, oh shit. They're gonna kill him here, and then he didn't die, and I was happy.
Yeah,
it was good. I really like this a lot. This is one of my favorite. This is all due respect to Snyder's Batman. This might have been my favorite DC book of the last 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, because the thing is that it's a DC book.
It's a DC book.
Yeah,
feeling has been gone.
Yeah, whereas what Snyder's been doing he's been doing Batman, which is great, and as he should, you know. But this was a DC book, so as far as you know the kickoff, the first you know kind of thing into Rebirth, great job. And now the question is, can they keep this spirit? And then how much influence can Johns have on the other writers and the rest of the line? And that's what will be remained. But. You know, as far as ratings go, I give this a solid A.
Ratings.
I give
for a 5-star scale.
A 5-star scale. It's 5 stars. It's 5 stars.
Five.
Yep.
You go to five. I give it a 5 as well.
Yep. I'm doing that too.
Ratings, Jess.
Removing myself from the emotional impact of it, which I do not feel as much as either of you, I'm going to go 4.
Sociopath.
No, I just don't relate to it as much. It's fine. But it was really good. It was for a book that was 80 pages that I felt like I had to read by the end. I was like, I'm glad I read that.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
So you say 4.5. Interesting.
I did say 4.5.
It was long.
I'm not taking off points because of that.
Pages. Yeah. 80 more pages. Give me 80 more.
I don't care. Yeah, just let it go. So
that's unrealistic.
It is unrealistic.
So all right, so let's move on. So this is a week of number ones and relaunches, and the next one up is the highly controversial scene-stealing thunder from Marvel of Captain America, Steve Rogers, number one.
I'm glad you said it that way, because to me the most interesting thing about this is we've talked for years about how Marvel eats DC's lunch in the PR marketing department.
Yep.
And... So you have DC putting out their giant Rebirth issue that resets the universe and they can get all the press and all the talk. And the only thing anybody was talking about was Captain America. They did a brilliant job of stealing the thunder from DC this week.
Yep. Which was surprising to me, but I guess it shouldn't be, given Captain America. It was surprising because I feel like if you're talking about the comics fandom, I feel like they would have been way more into the DC thing. As opposed to what seemed
well, but here's the thing. But no,
something
I mean,
like, angry about Josh.
I thought about this a lot. I thought about this for since Wednesday. So it's been two and a half days now. Since before Wednesday. But anyway, to get to the point. This is the Captain America Steve Rogers number one. This is the relaunch of Young Cap, written by Nick Spencer with art by Jesus Hayes. And this has got the recently de-aged Steve Rogers in a new costume with a new shield, et cetera, et cetera. And at the very end of it, he says "Hail Hydra," and so now everyone everyone freaked the fuck out. And that's what.
Oh wait, I'm sorry. I thought they were just mad about the stupid costume.
No.
We'll get to that. There's a flashback to when he's a kid and his mom, and they are recruited to come to a Hydra community meeting. And so that is buttressed with him saying "Hail Hydra"
in 1926. Yeah,
guys. So Steve has been Hydra agent all along. That means he's always been a bad guy. That means in like Infinity Gauntlet, when he walked up to Thanos and said, "Well, as long as one person stands up against you, you'll never win." That means he was still a bad guy. My entire life is shattered.
Is it? Well, so now going back to the controversy, what I think is interesting is that it taps into a very interesting moment in the zeitgeist where, coming off of the wild success of the most recent Captain America movie 2 weeks ago, mm-hmm. right, plus a generation of fandom that's been raised on those movies and not raised on 40 years of comics like some of us else have, you know, and also who all live in social media and all live to freak out at the latest thing. That's kind of what created the storm that exists now.
It's a perfect storm.
Yeah, exists now.
So is Nick Spencer a genius?
Yes.
Potentially.
For this particular for this particular reason, we haven't yet talked about the comic itself.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right.
Well, yeah, he knew exactly what would happen when he did this, and which is the brilliant thing about it. Now, you can understand comics history and understand that this is a cold open, and he's not actually a Hydra agent, and it's going to be revealed by the end of this arc that he's not actually a bad guy. You can understand he's been co-opted by Hydra in the past.
Yep.
You can understand that Jack Kirby drew Captain America with a Nazi saluting Hitler.
Yep.
This is a comic book. As Josh said online, this is a comic book trope. This is how things work.
Yep.
You can understand all those things and still not like this issue, and that would be my that put me in. That's who I am.
Oh, so you did not like the issue?
No.
Yeah, I'm not going to go that far, but I agree with you. Like, so I don't know that I really liked it. I don't know that I really. I sort of ambivalent about the issue itself. I don't think I really like this direction, probably for some of the same reasons that other people are protesting. I hesitate to use that word, but. Because it just feels like, oh, that's wrong. But also, it's supposed to make you feel like that.
Yes.
And it's whether you want to go along with that or not. So there's a couple. I think there's two different kinds of reactions. One is, what do I call it? Oh, the idiot reaction that thinks this is a thing.
Right.
Meaning, like, that thinks that this is a thing. And then there's the second reaction, which is more valid, I suppose, which is to say, you know, I feel uncomfortable that this character who means what he means is now doing this thing. And that is a little more understandable because some of this is very deeply felt because the enemy was the Nazis, which are sort of the same as Hydra, but not really, and we don't really know. And honestly, they changed it from Nazis to Hydra because they can't have the fucking IP on Nazis.
Right.
They get the IP on Hydra. So let's look at that like it is.
Yeah, and the thing is that all the hysterics – and the freaking out that this undoes everything, and this is a slap in the face of Jack Kirby, and you know, and all, and who was Jewish, and all that, like that is just all that is the hysteria button, and honestly, and some of the lengths and the direction that discourse has gone into is downright disturbing. When meanwhile it completely glosses over the even bigger, more disturbing thing from this issue, which is what the fuck happened to Sharon Carter.
She's old too.
When Steve got de-aged, does that mean then she got aged?
No, she was aged also.
She was aged after the story.
Oh, she was
not as much.
Oh God,
they were both old, and he got de-aged, and she didn't.
Oh God, I was like, I got there, and I was like, oh God, what happened to her?
No, to me, the bigger issue is the costume, which is terrible.
Yeah,
it is horrible.
And the shield, which feels like they got to the end of designing him, and they were like, I don't have the energy to design the shield. Just put a fucking star on it. Yeah. And the coloring was really terrible.
Yeah.
Cloudy on the they're on the helicarrier.
Yeah.
With the Christian motivational poster clouds.
His headpiece without the wings looks really bizarre, and I didn't like anyway. I think Nick Spencer is a really talented writer, and we love his stuff on The Fix. I think his style works on more snarky material.
I don't know that he gets sort of the majesty that this character requires.
And that style being applied to Cap didn't work for me at all. You take out the last page, I still wouldn't probably read beyond this issue. And the last page isn't keeping me. I would totally read the rest I thought the style worked for Cap. I don't think the style works for Cap at all. Everyone's a little too quippy and hip in this issue, and I don't think that's the cap I want to read.
I've been reading Sam Wilson for a while, and I don't think it's bad. I don't know that it's really speaking to me, though. So I think there's more of that happening. There was one more thing that I did want to touch on, and it's the idea that, let's see, we've been using cartoon Nazis as villains for 75 years now.
As we should.
And I feel like if you're okay with that in Indiana Jones or in all the Captain America stuff, like, then you have to accept that what you're playing with a little bit of fire.
Yeah.
And that's what that was all, the whole Mel Brooks thing is.
Yes. Yeah. I
destroy them by laughing at them. And
yes,
and you're allowed to, if nothing is so sacred. I'm seeing a lot of, you can't not, you know, the real Holocaust was terrible, but you can also explore the themes in that without denigrating the memory of the people that died and or the severity of the incident. It's not.
And also, they've been doing it by using the Nazis as cartoon villains for 75 right. years. And, right. and if you can't take that, then I don't think you should be able to do the other. And also, like, if that's the way you feel, that is totally fine. But it doesn't mean that it shouldn't exist. And that is the thing that's starting to bug me more and more and more, is that people says, this makes me uncomfortable, so it shouldn't exist. And I'm like, the fucking Klan shouldn't exist, but they have the right. And I don't want them to, and I don't want to say the thing, but they do, and that's how it works. You know, removing uncomfortable ideas is the worst thing.
This
is the worst.
I'm being drawn more and more away from internet and social media because of all this stuff constantly happening.
Yeah. Yep.
Just more and more. I'll be surprised if in 5 years I still am on social media, because it's just it's.
Yeah, well, I'll be surprised in 5 years if the world is still around.
All right, well, anyway.
That's true.
Yeah.
So yeah, I didn't like this for other reasons, despite the fact that also the other thing was, Josh, do you remember back when, you know, Cap died in Captain America 25? We walked into work and our coworker was like, "I can't believe they killed Cap," right?
That's true. Yeah. Of course, I remember it.
Well, this basically the same thing happened to me. This one, I walk in. So Captain America's a Hydra agent, and I was just like, I guess. I haven't read it yet.
9 a.m. I saw it. Like I read them both really early because I saw which way it was going. So like by 9 a.m. it was everywhere.
Yeah.
So I just beat it.
In. I hadn't even got a chance. I hadn't even downloaded them yet.
Yeah. Oh gosh. All right. So I guess we got to wrap this up because we've been going on. This is very long.
Can't believe let's you keep, read this.
Yeah. Let's keep this going. It. I read this too.
Yeah. Well, I through it. I got so in addition to DC Rebirth number one and Captain America Steve Rogers number one, it was also and picking up last week we talked about Future Quest number one, the Warner Brothers mandated Hanna-Barbera cartoon reboot of the DC universe continued this week with Scooby Apocalypse number one. And I just wanted to, we can talk about it very quickly, but I could not, like, it was like, it's like a car wreck. You can't not look. And this was the edgy, extremifying current kids, you know, kind of relating to the new Scooby Gang character designs by Jim Lee, you know, where you've got Shaggy's got tattoos and he's got a hipster mustache. And turns out he's just a low rent dog trainer. And and Scooby has a collar that emits emoticons, emojis. Yeah. All right. And so, like, given all of that, who do they give this book to? Keith Giffen and J.M.D. Matias.
Who dies in their 60s.
Let me remind you, when we interviewed Keith Giffen nearly 10 years ago about his classic Justice League run in the 80s, he likened it to doing vaudeville.
That's a reference all the kids can get.
Right,
exactly. Vaudeville.
Vaudeville.
So whereas Future Quest last week was wonderful and delightful and like the right tone and all this sort of stuff, this was just a fucking abomination.
I flipped through it. I was like, maybe I will read it. And I saw every panel so jammed. I was like, I can't even look at this. This is...
And it's Howard Porter, who I used to love.
Howard Porter is their new McGuire. Like, he's been doing all their projects.
Yeah,
he did Justice League 3000 with them.
I don't mind this. It's what he had to work with.
Yeah.
This was terrible. If there's one thing that doesn't need a edgy reboot, it's Scooby-Doo, for God's sakes. Also, I don't understand why everyone's new look is basically identifiable as them. Even, you know, there's even Fred's wearing a scarf. But why is Shaggy completely unrecognizable?
Yep.
Like, everyone else, you can look at them and say, okay, well, that's Fred and Velma and Daphne, I get it. Right. This is Scooby-Doo. Who's the guy that looks like hipster Green Arrow? Oh, that's apparently Shaggy. Like,
because they can't make him a stoner, I guess, anymore. So it's
why not?
Yeah, I know.
Now marijuana's illegal in places, and they're in Burning Man, and this opens up.
Yeah, it's so dumb.
It was pretty terrible, and I hate you because I wasn't going to read it, and then you put it on the script, and I was like, well, I guess that'll be more fun to talk about if I've also read it, and I
I just thought in the spirit of last week's conversation about the Laugh Olympics and wacky races and all that sort of stuff, this was let's keep it going, and then it just hit a wall. It was so cliche and so you know, like, just what you think of old people trying to write for the kids. They even use the bad cracked up font for the word apocalypse in the logo. Yeah. Like that late 90s broken font, you know, like, oh god.
They poochied the shit out of this.
Oh yeah, poochie, yeah, total poochie.
Full poochie.
Yeah, full poochie. Yeah. So, unfortunate. Oh well.
I mean my only question really was like, who's this for? That was my question. Honestly, who is this for?
It's not for the kids, and it's only going to piss off old people like us, so I don't know.
Yeah.
It doesn't piss me off. I mean, like, it's also, you can apply the same thing. This is just a thing they're doing. It's not going to change it. You know, it's like,
exactly.
It's stupid.
I know it's stupid, but, like, my main thought is just, like, I don't get who they're making it for. Like, it doesn't, I don't see what audience there is for this, and that makes it a bad business decision.
Yep.
Fred would have a tribal tattoo, though.
the Panosian cover.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, like that kind of like, oh, that's Shaggy-esque.
Yeah.
Like working within the confines of who the character is and what Jim Lee designed, I thought that was really nice.
Yeah.
And the Joelle Jones one is nice too.
Yeah, they didn't need to Wii 3 Scooby. I don't know. It was so funny because I was in the comic shop and we were flipping through it and we're talking about the dumb collar with the emoticons. And James is like, well, it's not like he can say rut-ro. And then I open the book and there's literally on a page where he goes rut-ro. And I'm like, well, apparently. He's just like, well, what the fucking point? What's the point? Like, if he can talk, why does he have the dumb emoticon thing? Oh, God. Anyway, so.
Are you supposed to read that Scooby in the Scooby voice?
I do.
Yeah.
One pair of motor goggles coming up.
How can you not? Yeah.
I guess. But it doesn't look like it's coming out of that purse. That looks like a handsome person.
So this week we had our annual issue of Afterlife with Archie. I meant to look up when the last one came out, but
that's why I was like, number 9? Really? That's it? I feel like this came out it started coming out 3 years ago. Yeah.
We're getting 9. maybe two a year. If you ever wanted to read an issue in which Reggie masturbates to the thought of Midge, then this was the week for you. I love that this book just completely that Archie puts out is just like, fuck it. We're just going to burn this to the ground.
Yeah. Isn't that the point?
Yeah, it's great. I love it. I can love the regular stuff, and I also love this as well. This was the issue in which we examine Reggie and find that he's a sociopath who was actually been in love with Midge this whole time. And was, you know, only really fucking with everybody else because he doesn't know what else. He doesn't know how to relate to anybody. And you know, this is really great Francesco Francavilla art. The opening page was this wonderful history of Reggie's life that was drawn in a very different style than the rest of the book, and like almost like a children's illustrated book. And then we get delve into his head where we find that he doesn't really know how to feel things. He sort of mirrors other people. He's dead inside, basically. And at the end, he decides he's going to try to be the hero and go off and buy time for the group by walking up to the zombies and getting eaten. And the zombies won't even eat him. And so that shows you how dead inside he is. It was a really good book. It's just I didn't expect to see Reggie masturbating.
Yeah.
Which I mean, that's almost always true.
I never expect it.
Yeah, that's no one expects. Reggie. No one expects the Spanish Inquisition or Reggie masturbating.
We also find out that he was the one who hit Hot Dog with his car, started this whole problem in the first place.
Wow! If it wasn't for you kids, he would have gotten away with it.
He did it on purpose because he was pissed. He purposely ran down Hot Dog with his car, and so then he goes. He supplicates himself in front of Jughead, the king of the zombies, and Zombie Hot Dog, and Sabrina, who is now like queen of Cthulhu, and she calls Reggie their dark prince. So this is going to be some sort of unholy alliance here going on. He has to go back and kill Betty, and if he does that, all bets are off. I might do anything.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm all right. I'm just thinking about it for a second.
All bets are off.
All bets are off. But this, I also really enjoyed Captain Marvel 5, which we talked last week about Power Man and Iron Fist, in which it was a book I wouldn't necessarily have picked up, except for the buzz, but was enjoying it more and more. And I think the same thing with Captain Marvel number 5, in which I only picked up because Rob made the first one the pick of the week.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely. Yeah. I don't particularly have much interest in the character. I always liked it when she was on the Avengers or whatever.
Right.
And I don't know anything about Alpha Flight. I've never read Alpha Flight in my life. And when Ron picked that one as pick of the week, I just started reading it. And this was the week where I was like, boy, this is fun. Yeah. This is nearly like Guardians of the Galaxy 5-6 years ago fun.
Yep.
It's that kind of book. And so thanks for making that the pick.
It's my pleasure.
And also, like, I really like the personalities that are going on and the difference. I really like the art. It's a super fun book. It's really well done. And I'd like to see more of this from the big two superhero people, please. Like, there's no high concept to it. It's just, you know, make this thing interesting.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that, like, I think what it did was, it, you know, like the first issue, why I liked it so much was because it was just wacky and it was just like,
yep,
you know, characters in a different situation, but it made it work. And this was a solid arc that had like this fifth issue wrapped it up in a good way. It felt, you know, it felt established. And now, you know, now I'm kind of bummed that it's going to run right into the event.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right. And I'm hoping that it, you know, that doesn't really, you know,
change it.
Yeah, exactly. To screw things up or whatnot, but we'll see. But if anything, we got 5 issues. That was a lot of fun. So,
yeah, yeah. And I'm like, just as I'm flipping through it, though, like the team of Chris Anka and Philippe Smith with Matt Wilson on colors, like I was like, oh, this feels like a nice, like a well done modern comic book, and it's like it's really fun to sort of see the team interact with each other. It's that feeling like when I was a kid and I would pick up an Avengers book and I hadn't really been reading it or didn't know, but I was like, oh, all these people really know each other well and they're interacting as if it's been going on forever. Like, and it works really well that way. It was fun.
Yep.
Good stuff.
Good stuff indeed. All right. Also good stuff is iFanboy.com. We're very proud of it. And we're thankful for everybody who has chosen to help support iFanboy. And if you would like to help iFanboy to make sure that we are around for a very long time, you can do that by going to iFanboy.com/support. The quickest and easiest way you can do that is click on the link to go shop at Amazon. That way, any purchases you make at Amazon, we get a little cut of it from Amazon's pocket, not from yours. So that way you get your Star Wars Blu-ray, and then we get a couple of pennies. And Jeff Bezos is none the wiser. If you'd like to support us in a more direct fashion, you can go to ifanboy.com/support. There's links there for our membership program for $3 a month to $30 a year. Or if you can make a one-time donation via PayPal, a bunch of you have done that recently, and we want to thank everybody who's done that. That's awesome. And we thank everyone for your support. So, all right, let's speed through the rest of this stuff because I have no idea how long this show is.
Not Sex number either. 28.
Yeah.
Sex number 28 by Joe Casey. I wanted to check in on it just because there was one thing that was cool, and it is there was a big fight scene where Simon Cook finally got to like beat a bunch of people up, and he was nearly killed. But I was like, awesome. That was I mean, they waited 28 issues to have him do anything like that. So that's really and really the main reason that I want to talk about it is that our fearless author here, Joe Casey, wrote himself quite a long column in the back. And it was about superheroes and where they exist in the market today and who they're for. And I thought it was great. Do you remember when he used to do a column like forever ago on Newsarama?
Yep.
Best comic column ever.
He's been doing these in the back of his issues every time.
No, I know. But this one, like a lot of them are kind of rambling. And this just happened to be very pointed, I think, giving – well, it had a point, yeah. Very, but also with like everything that went on this week. Like it was very important. And then there was even a bit how he really like he always thought that the Kid Flash costume was better than the regular Flash one. And I was like, oh, that's surprising. But you know, if you're a 40-ish year old person who reads superheroes, you should read this because it's super interesting from a guy who has a great perspective. And the issue was really good, like all of them have been. Cause it's still a great book.
Cool. Extraordinary X-Men number 10, 10 issues in, and apparently there's a big event going on, an apocalypse war. Literally no clue what's going on. It really just kind of punctuates the sad state of affairs in the X-Men corner of the world. It makes me very sad, but like, you know, I enjoy the Humberto Ramos art and it looks nice, but the story is just a mess and there's nothing grounding the relationships or doing, I don't know. It makes me sad.
So. I liked the Forge scene.
Yeah, that was the one thing I wanted to get. It was that in there's a, you know, scene of Forge, you know, kind of, you know, getting stressed out and annoyed, and then Ileana says, "Listen, I'm the only one who's going to say this. Storm doesn't want you." And like, it was just like, I was like, "Oh, that was hard." That was the one high moment of it, because it tied back to a relationship, and it was good. But too much fighting, too much, you know, I don't know. They just need to ground them again. I feel like the tether to the X-Men is gone, and they just need to reestablish that. But so,
I think it's funny, even though Marvel hates Fox, they've got an Apocalypse movie coming out, so they still tie it in.
Yeah, of course. Well, they're not stupid, but the thing is, it makes no sense. So whatever. But
yeah.
So,
Ms. Marvel number 7. Did either of you read this?
Yes. That's another one that you guys have recommended that I started reading on, and it's been good. Another one of my favorite female Marvel character.
Yeah, one of my favorite issues of the whole series, both volumes. It was just basically just a self-contained one shot. It's the Road to Civil War II, and it's a science fair in New York, and the New Jersey team, the Jersey City team, led by the kids from Miss Marvel school, versus, you know, and then there's the Brooklyn team that are led by the school that Miles Morales goes to. So it's Miles and Genki and all their friends, and then it's sort of a big allegory to the Civil War itself and how stupid it is that they're all fighting, and it gets increasingly ridiculous. But I loved the wacky tone of it. I loved all the background jokes. There's a great opening page showing the floor of the science fair. You see all these bizarre things happening in it. I just thought this was a great, funny character piece. There's a whole bit at the end. Why did we even fight? What was the point of that? What was the point of us, the friends, fighting each other? This is dumb. And I always like when companies have the balls to print stuff that basically takes the air out of what they're doing.
Yeah.
This was really good.
What was the thing with Hickman when he was doing the last year's thing? And there was like the 8-pager about him having no idea what he was doing when he was writing it.
Oh, so Secret War. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. No, not Secret War. Battle World.
Yeah. Well, Secret War. That was part of Secret War. So.
Was it? All right, whatever. Secret Invasion. I'm totally getting them all. Like, they're all just blending now. Yeah, it was good. I liked it a lot. So I'm still reading Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. Yeah, I know, right? It's you know what it is? It's a Spider-Man story, but she has a big dinosaur. And that dinosaur was created by Jack Kirby. And she's got to, like, get around her parents, and she's trying to do stuff. And then this other story going on here is that there's this kid who is on a Kree spaceship, it's not Marvel, it's the other way around, and he decides he's gonna go destroy her, and so he flies in from space and ends up in her class. And it's just a super cute story, and I really like the way it's drawn. And at first I said I'm not sure who this is for, but I think it's really fun, and if you have kids, I think they should read it, but also you could probably read it too. It's fun. And so she ended up in one of those inhuman cocoons and was all worried and came out, and then, like, supposedly nothing had happened to her. But then, so that's like the mystery. What's going to happen? And they sort of give you a hint at the end. But it's a good book. It's fun. It's like when they say they don't make comics for kids or for girls or whatever. Like, this is a great comic for everybody.
They absolutely do. Yeah. No.
I wanted to talk about Omega Men number 12. I got behind on this, so I hadn't been reading them as they were coming out. But this was the last one. If you remember, this is Tom King and Barnaby Bagenda.
Which is nice. The Barnaby Bagenda on art and Romulo Fajardo Jr. on colors. Like, this, this creative team should be praised just for that.
Well, they should also be praised. This is really, you don't have ever heard either of those names, and this is an amazing looking book. Like, it's beautiful, like coloring and writing.
You have to go back and write that article, the best names in comics.
Yeah, it is good.
Barnaby Bagenda needs to be in there.
Yeah.
Well, Romulo Fajardo Jr. is not so bad either.
That's a great team. I hope they work together forever.
And just like the old Tom King, you know.
Bagenda and Fajardo. So you know you got a quality book.
Anyway, this is the final issue. You may remember that this was sort of a shit can by DC, and people were like, just let him finish. And they were like, okay, you can finish. So instead of doing 6 issues, he got the whole thing in 12 issues. Pretty much the entire thing is done in a 9-panel grid. It was a little hard to wrap my hand around at some points, but I really like the end of it. I like how it wrapped up, and I like that, like, it's not a happy ending for these characters and for Kyle Rayner at the end. And then the last page is like this little meta treatise on the comic book panel page and how they're all trapped in these boxes. And I was like, ooh, dark there. I really dug it. It's clearly like, it's like love of comic book, stuff in a big way. And I dug it.
Excellent. So we haven't been to Star Wars Corner in a while, and since Star Wars 19 was finally the issue wrapping up that storyline that's just never ending with the prison, I was a little bored, and I was like, yeah, maybe I'll go back and read all five issues of Obi-Wan and Anakin. And so I did, and I wish I didn't. But what cracked me up about this issue was, so basically the whole crux of this is that this is a stage in Anakin's training when he's considering leaving the Jedi Order because he doesn't feel like he fits in, and him and Obi-Wan go on one mission. And he's hoping that there's a, you know, and Obi-Wan's hoping that that this will kind of reignite his, you know, desire to be a Jedi or whatnot. And of course it does. But at the end of this issue, there's a flashback to before this where Obi-Wan is updating Yoda and saying Anakin wants to leave. And Yoda's like, well, that's up to him and blah, blah, blah. We're not a prison and, you know, whatever. And then Yoda says, but if he does leave, you know what this means. And Obi-Wan goes, yes, then I must leave as well. And I just went, fuck you. No, it doesn't, you stupid. Oh God. So anyway, so
I like the team on there, but I was like, I'm not gonna read that. No good can come of that.
No good came of it. So
yeah, you knew that though.
I know.
You hate Reddit. You know, yeah, that's no one's.
No, I didn't hate read it. No, I read it. I read it fairly, and you know.
But you knew.
Yeah.
Well, there's nothing going on there.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
That you wanted.
Yeah. So those are the books
that's
we read
like,
this
that's
week.
That's like you're going to a sushi place that you don't want to eat. Just go, I don't like anything in here. This place is awful. You're not going to eat that. You're
oh, but come on. Oh, God. It's not good. Anyway, those are the books we read this week. Fun week of comics. Controversial. Do we have time for questions? Or we just gotta do
why not? Who the hell knows let's how just long go. Ago? Fuck it.
All right. First question comes from Leo from Brooklyn. Writes in and says, I've been reading through the old volumes of Garth Ennis's The Boys in anticipation of the upcoming show. Is there a Boys TV show in that? Did I miss that?
Everything's in development.
Anyway, so he goes, I got to the part where the X-Men stand-ins, called the G-Men, are touted as basically being lovable misfits that are cash cows for their publisher, and the Avengers stand-ins, the Revengers, are second stringers. And it was hard to fall back into that mindset where the X-Men were indeed king of the hill. So I took a week off work and thought about this for a few days.
Nice.
Well done. I applaud the commitment, Leo. And I thought about it for a few days. What happened to make the X-Men fall so low in recent years? Now that we're in an Avengers world for the past few years, will the Avengers get oversaturated? Will they fall out of favor and make room for an X-Men resurgence? Or will something new maybe take its place, like the Justice League?
Well, the Justice League is not in Marvel.
Well, no, but will, I mean, will
the Justice League take the place of the X-Men?
No, I mean,
first of all, the X-Men fall out of favor. You didn't even use the hyphens in their names.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah,
that tells you how far they favor they've fallen.
I think the X-Men have fallen out of favor basically due to, I mean, which we referred to it, you know, previously, is basically due to the dispute between Marvel and Fox and the movie rights and all that kind of stuff, and you know, and the fact that Marvel has taken, you know, the Avengers world, you know, Iron Man and Captain America and Thor made really good movies that have captured the zeitgeist. And so, you know, I'm gonna reserve. We haven't recorded. We're gonna talk about it in a little bit, but we haven't recorded our podcast about X-Men Apocalypse. So I'm gonna reserve any comments about the future of the X-Men film franchise for that podcast. So go listen to that because I don't want to spoil anything for Connor. But
you have thoughts.
I have thoughts. I definitely have thoughts. So. But I think we all can agree that the Justice League will not be taking over anybody's popularity contest.
Well, so I mostly agree with you. I think that the popularity of the movies is definitely. But the thing was, the Avengers have been the king of Marvel before the movies came out. They, you know, it was Bendis yes. taking over the Avengers propelled them to the top. And the question is. Because that was years before the movies came out. So the question is, what in the comics world brought the X-Men down? Something did, because they're not as popular as they used to be. For 20 years, they were the most popular comics out there. And then something happened, because it was prior to the films. The films cemented the Avengers, but before that, it had happened already.
Yeah. And I mean, and I don't know if it was something in editorial or some sort, but there was a time where, I mean, you know, some of the key guys were on. I mean, the X-Men was a much, you know, like, wanted position. I mean, Brubaker, Fraction, like, you had all the, you know, like, they put a lot of stuff behind it, and then they just kind of stopped doing it. And I think it's from above saying, because don't support the movies, so don't, you know, so they're just doing it just to do it and to placate fans because they can't cancel them.
But something happened before that. So something happened in the comics before that. It did.
Yeah.
And I think, I wonder if it was, you know, the image. I mean, did they ever recover from Jim Lee leaving and all those guys leaving?
Joss Whedon, the Astonishing X-Men era, Grant Morrison.
That was the last gasp.
Yeah, I know. Like, that was the last gasp. And
Astonishing X-Men and New X-Men, that was 2001.
Yeah.
There's been books since then.
They weren't popular. Like, they weren't the thing everyone had to be reading.
Yeah.
Jason Aaron.
That was great, but that wasn't zeitgeist capturing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
they haven't been that way since 2001. That hasn't since Grant Morrison finished New X-Men.
Yeah.
So I mean,
that's a good point, Connor. That's a very good, and it could be argued that it was a sliding down the slope at over a 15-year pace.
And that's seven years before the first Marvel Studios film. So it's not the movies. The movies just cemented it. Something happened before the films.
You're right. You absolutely are right.
I mean, it's possible. It just ran its course. I mean, a thing is popular for 40 or 50 years. It's a pretty good run, you know?
No, it wasn't popular for 40 or 50. It was popular for maybe 15. Right. 15 to 20. I'll give it 15 to 20.
Late 70s to
mid-90s.
Through the 90s.
Yeah.
20.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, I think you're being generous on late 70s. It's more early 80s.
You know better than I.
Yeah.
83, 84.
Yeah, exactly. So I think Connor, you've got a great point. I think the exodus of top talent who were all on those X-Men books leaving, they never recovered, and they've had little moments of blips. You know, you stumbled along, and then you got Joe Madureira. And then it fell back down. Stumble along, you got Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely, and then it fell back down. Then you perk back up with Joss Whedon and John Cassidy, it fell back down. And then it perked back up a little with Jason Aaron and Nick Bradshaw and stuff like that. But every time the perk back up and drop back down,
lower.
It drops a little lower. Yeah, yeah. Oh, wow. That's
and doesn't perk as high.
I wonder. I wonder if this could be visualized with sales data. Oh, that'd be really interesting. Anyway, well, I don't. It was time for that, but
you're not going to do that. So.
Yeah, but you know what I mean, right? Yeah, like you're absolutely right. Totally. Yeah, yeah. So,
I think you probably just see a normal curve. You see it grow.
Yep.
And reach its peak in the early '90s with Jim Lee's, and they launched X-Men, and there's 25 covers, and then just it progresses down. That's the natural progression of it.
I'll tell you what, though, Leo, it breaks my heart. Breaks my heart. So.
All right, another question about something else that's popular. Josh from Boys Ranch, Texas. I have a question about the popularity of Star Wars. I, like you guys, have been a fan for what feels like my entire life, even in the dark times between 1985 and 1995 when it wasn't cool to like Star Wars. Now it seems like Star Wars is back in pop culture vogue and everybody has jumped back on the bandwagon. To my joy and entertainment, delight, Disney and Marvel have flooded the market with all things Star Wars. My worry is when it comes to the world of entertainment, it seems like something becomes too popular, you get the inevitable negative backlash. So my question to you is, do you foresee a negative backlash against the popularity of Star Wars where it falls out of fashion? Or is it a franchise that is big enough to transcend the doom that has crippled so many others?
I'm going to say, and by the way, the you get the theme of these questions, a lot of ennui or ennui about the popularity of things. I'm going to say that because Star Wars survived the prequels and came back as strong as it did now, I think that it's transcendent. I think that it is golden egg that will never
survive anything.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. That's my thought.
You don't think? I mean,
it fell out of favor.
Survive mean?
It fell out of favor. Mid-2000s, not cool. It was not cool.
Well,
not cool in a different way. In 85 to 95, it just wasn't a thing. It wasn't on the radar.
Right. Yeah. No. But
and then it became like. You're right. After the prequels, it became a thing to actively hate.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
But you didn't. No one hated the whole thing.
No. No. But the idea of it was just kind of
Star Wars no longer had its rarefied, untouchable position as the perfect, you know, sci-fi.
But the three movies did. Well, and actually, the two movies did. Actually, that whole thing managed to eat up Return of the Jedi, oddly enough. I would say some of it is going to fall out of fashion. Some of it won't. It'll be like Paul McCartney.
Careful.
You know what I'm doing. I mean, like, no one's going to go back and be like, oh, Revolver was shit. They're going to say, oh, yeah, that was a genius thing. But things after it weren't so great. And eventually you see him, you go, oh, it's Paul McCartney again. Damn it. And I think there has to be some of that. Like,
I don't think that's the case. As long as the films are good,
That's fine. But there is also, even if the films are good, there's still going to be a certain, for me, like, this is just for me. Like, there's a certain amount of all right enough.
Yeah.
Like, it's everywhere on everything, and it's not like Disney isn't going to take it as far to the limit and past as possible, and shoving it in everybody's faces, try to squeeze every single cent out of their whatever their $4 billion investment was. And then some, yeah. You know, like I think that a discernible Star Wars fan who does not want it ruined for them needs to pick and choose a little of what of that experience they want.
Right.
How's that?
Well, that's partially why I only watch the movies. I don't watch the cartoons. I don't read the comics. Yeah. I don't want Star Wars overloads. So.
Well, you don't want Obi-Wan and Anakin comics.
Right.
I mean, that's a great example. That's the great. And so there was another email that we didn't that I didn't include, but someone was asking if we were excited for the upcoming Han Solo series. And like, honestly, I'm on the fence. Like, I don't, you know, like it's. I mean, I've been loving Jason Aaron's Star Wars book, and I've really enjoyed Kieran Gillen on Darth Vader. But beyond that, it's like it might be too much. Like, I think
it's getting there. I mean, there was definitely a point. It's funny because you said like there was a point in the mid '90s. Where I was reading a bunch of novels and I went, I gotta stop.
Yeah.
Like I just started over like a Rogue Squadron novel and I thought, no, I'm going too far into this. I need to back out.
Well, yeah, well, that was my, you know, we've talked about this before, but like when the novel came out where Chewbacca died, I was like, yeah, you know, I don't want to live in that world.
I was 10 years before that. Yeah. Like it was, I think it was before the first prequel.
Yeah.
Because I had read like 8 in a row. Like, yeah. I'd read all the Zahn ones, and I read Empire.
I mean, I have very fond memories of the entire time period between, you know, mainly college, 1995 through 1999. I was always reading a Star Wars book and always enjoying it. It was and it was like a great little cycle because they had those little dime paperback, you know, like series, like the Rogue Squadron and the New Jedi Order and stuff like that. And then like every 8 months or so, there was a single hardcover. You know, like a big, like a self-contained one book, and like there was a good run. There was a really, really good run of those books. But then when I got to that Chewbacca one, I'm like, yeah, no, I'm out. And then, you know, and then I kind of stepped away. And then the prequel thing started and got all crazed up again. And then after episode 2 and 3, it was like I actually downplayed my Star Wars interest. Yeah, you know,
so, exactly.
Yeah,
I didn't want relatives to buy you junk anymore.
Right, exactly.
You like Star Wars, right? I don't need that.
There's this all comes down to the movies and how good they are. We're almost at 10 years of Marvel Studios movies with no end in sight because the movies have been good, and no one complains about them because they enjoy them. So we're just starting. We can go 10 years of two Star Wars movies a year, and as long as they're really good, people won't complain about it.
Yeah.
I don't watch the cartoons. I don't read the comics. I don't, you know, novels come out. If you're someone who goes through all of it and then gets tired of it, that's certainly possible. But as long as the movies are good,
yeah,
it won't be there won't be a backlash.
Right, quality will be key because there was a backlash when the quality wasn't good. So
right,
but that could
quality wins out.
Yeah,
no. Sure, especially it could. But as long as they are, I mean,
after this cycle, they finish their next trilogy and they do their ones in the middle. Those are all probably going to be pretty good. Then you're going to get one that you're like, I don't know about that, and then. You know, after
maybe not. I mean, Marvel, Disney has definitely learned the lesson from Marvel Studios in that quality wins out over everything. So, listen, I've worked with Disney professionally. There's certainly a possibility they will fuck this up. But, you know, we'll see. See the lessons they've learned. They know what they've got here. These two franchises have basically saved their entire company, you know.
Yeah.
Not Disney saving, but it propped them up to become even bigger behemoths than they are, and it makes the majority of their revenue right now.
So basically,
they're changing their parks to accommodate these franchises.
They basically could have walked up to us in like 1997. They're like, "Hey, you three, what do you think we should do?" and we would have just been like, you should do Star Wars and Marvel movies. And that's what we would have said then.
Indiana Jones.
Indiana Jones, but
$1 million for the thoughts. So as long as the movies are good, there won't be a backlash. But if they start, two years, fine. One at the beginning of the year, one at the end of the year. That's fine. More than that, then you're in trouble.
Well, and all I gotta say is, Josh and Leo, just take a deep breath. Everything's gonna be fine. Things are gonna be popular. Things aren't gonna be popular. Just like what you like. Enjoy what you enjoy. Everything will be fine. So.
And no, we should acknowledge West Tim.
Cast members. No.
Tim from Milwaukee, who wrote in about the Han Solo book.
Oh, yes, yeah. So, yes, Tim as well, too. If you've got any questions or want to ask us our thoughts of anything, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. And don't forget to tell us who you are and where you're from. And a large number of you wrote in reaction to last week's show with thoughts and comments and stuff like that related to Darwin and Timmy. And we just want to thank everybody for the kind thoughts. We read everything, and so thank you for that. So
yes. Overwhelming number of people.
Overwhelming.
Right. Yeah. Really nice. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. So back to the regular things. We did a podcast on the Captain America Civil War movie, which is your spoiler. We all enjoyed. If you want to go that, you can check back in the feed. Or you can go to ifanboy.com. You can find that there. Listen to it. Comment. Enjoy. You could also do another thing.
Yes, we have. We did a show on Preacher. The Preacher pilot aired last week on AMC in America. It's airing again this weekend. And there'll be a second episode next week. If you want to hear what we thought about the Preacher pilot, you can find that show two back on the feed because
X-Men Apocalypse comes out this weekend, and Connor, myself, and is Romo joining us? Or?
Yes, Romo's
cool. So me, Connor, and Mike Romo are discussing X-Men Apocalypse, and that will be on the feed immediately behind this show, and you hear what our thoughts are on the latest installment of the X-Men movie, the third movie in this cycle, the sixth movie in all the X-Men movies, or the ninth movie if you count the Wolverine, or the tenth if you count Deadpool.
It's very confusing. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very confusing.
It's in the world.
Yeah.
They go to the X-Men.
Not.
Yep, it's in the world. It is in the world.
But it's Marvel Studios.
No, it's not.
No,
Deadpool
it's
not. Was Fox.
It was Fox.
It was?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
They
just liked it so much that they were on board anyway.
Oh, yeah, of course, because they're going to sell comics.
Fox,
yeah.
Fuck so. It. This was great.
Yeah.
We'll take it.
Yeah. anyway, go to the feed or go to ifanboy.com where you can listen to X-Men Apocalypse, Preacher, Captain America, Civil War, all the great stuff. Great time for comic fans this summer, and it's all just getting started.
Well, before we move on to the next one, Ron, we have Warcraft in 2 weeks.
I know, I can't wait. I saw a big poster at the theater last night. I cannot wait.
So we're gonna. So, I think Ron and I will do a Warcraft podcast.
Yeah,
I can go. I'll go.
Okay. There'll be a Warcraft podcast.
More Warcraft.
Take a little break.
Also, there's gonna be a Talksplode. I've already recorded it. I'm gonna fit it in the middle of those things somewhere.
Great. Look at all this content. Look at all this free content we're giving you.
So Warcraft,
look at it.
And then in a month and a half later, Star Trek Beyond, and then another 2 week August and Killing Joke and Suicide Squad the same week in August. So it's going to be a lot of extra shows this summer.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
And of course, if you can't get enough of our voices and you haven't, go and check out Goodfellas Minute. That's our podcast where we went through the movie Goodfellas 1 minute at a time, one show for every minute in the movie over the course of 145 episodes over at GoodfellasMinute.com.
Yes. And you can head over to ifanboy.com where you can comment on this show as well as find the links and the downloads to all the other previous shows and other special edition podcasts and things like that. Let people know what you think of this week's books, of the movies, of the TV shows, all that other fun stuff. And make sure you're following us on Facebook at facebook.com/ifanboy, and we're at ifanboy on Twitter. And you can follow us individually on Twitter if you like. Josh is at J.A. Flanagan, Connor's at C.S. Kilpatrick, and I am at Ron Exo.
And if you like the show, write us a review on iTunes, or better yet, tell your friends about the podcast. Introduce your mom to the podcast while you're barbecuing this weekend. Put it on. Put it on while you're having a party. See what people think. They might dig it. Bring it, bring it to the beach. Play it there for everyone. We appreciate it. I think that's appropriate.
I love this version of Connor. I want you to do that every time. I love it. It's so good. Bring it to the beach.
Yeah, why not? Help us spread the iFanboy love all across the country and all around the world. That's it for this week's show. It's been long because two big books came out and we lost control of the clock.
Yes. So.
And no one's complaining. No one's going to be like, oh, guys.
Yeah.
A little behind the scenes. Normally we start recording and we go, and that way we have a clock. This time we started recording and then we fucked around for maybe two minutes, maybe five.
That
I don't
threw
know
us off, yeah. It
threw us completely off, so I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
So I apologize. I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
El Hydra.
Oh, too soon.
And isn't it such a shame too heavy for the lightness, weightless in the rain. All our words are wasted. Isn't it quite similar?
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.